had that requisite intent, element of intent.
What effect does it have that he initially denied paternity, in fact, denied knowing the little boy's mother?
Yep. That doesn't play into abandonment, Your Honor. His testimony was that he denied that he was the father because that's what he had been told by the mother. He's not on the birth certificate, which is in evidence. He wasn't present during the birth. That's in evidence. He was actually in the state of Kansas at the time of the birth. And the mother had said, he's not yours.
But didn't he testify that he didn't even know the mom?
I think that there was, he didn't testify that. I think there was some allegations from one of the caseworkers in a past report that he initially had stated that he didn't know her. So that was hearsay evidence at trial. His testimony was, he said, I don't think I'm father because she told me I'm not father. So I don't think that goes to abandonment here. His rights were also terminated based on substantial and continuous neglect. Again, I don't think that the record shows that he substantially and continuously neglected. One thing that courts look at is, was he following a case plan? Well, there is no case plan in this case for him to follow. Another thing is lack of parental motivation. Not having the ability to come to court, but attempting, calling people, asking for assistance, shows that he wasn't lacking any parental motivation. He was lacking funds, and he was lacking the abilities. Another circumstance is whether or not he has an environment to which the child could return or could go to. The evidence shows that he lives with his sister, who is a certified nurse. She's a CNA. That it's a two-story, five-bedroom home, that they are ready and willing and able to take Jaden into their home. The evidence shows that he is low-functioning. However, that alone isn't enough to say that he cannot parent his child. His abilities right now are all speculation. The environment that he lives in, it sounds stable. Again, we're dealing with a lot of we don't know because the state of Nebraska has never sent anybody there to look at the home that he's in. They've never sent anybody from Kansas to look at the home that he is in. So all we know is what was before the court, which is what he said. And that is a stable home. And there's no rule that says he has to have independent housing. I know that the juvenile court found that he didn't have independent housing, but oftentimes parents live with relatives and that's a good family support and a good environment for the child.
Counsel, the way I understand this, the child has been out of the home during basically his whole life.
Yes.
So it would be out of 15 out of the last 22 months. So subsection 7 would apply as far as that's concerned. So what we're really talking about is best interest.
Yes, Your Honor, because that section does apply. I believe the case law relating to that section says if you're going to terminate on 15 out of 22 months alone, the best interest requirement requires clear and convincing evidence that the parent is unfit. The length of time out of the home alone is not enough to show best interest. And I don't think that we have that here.
Morning.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is Amy Shuckman, Deputy Douglas County Attorney. I just first want to address the fact that the father wanted to intervene, but no one would help him. This is a case where the department and the contracted agency bent over backwards to help this father. In 2009, the initial assessment worker sent him a letter right when Jaden was removed, telling him he might be the father, notifying him how to intervene. The first ongoing worker, Candace Ward, also contacted him and notified him he may be the father and how to intervene. He responded with, and her testimony was, that he adamantly denied even knowing the mother. Despite this, Candace Ward still went over genetic testing, still went over how to intervene, and he responded with, I'm married, this could be very bad for me and my marriage. In 2010, almost a year later, he contacted Candace Ward back, told her that he may be the father. She set up genetic testing. He told her that he already had an attorney. There's no need for the department to provide him with information at that point because he told them he already had an attorney lined up.
Did he agree with that testimony during the hearing?
Did the father?
Yes. Did he say that he had told the department that he had an attorney?
I'm not sure whether he said it, but the worker said it. It was documented in her notes that from their conversation. She has an obligation to document conversations that she has with parents, with service providers, with other children. And that was documented in her note. So I think she would be the one best suited to provide the testimony on whether or not the father had an attorney. I think his testimony is self-serving as well.
But are those notes in evidence?
Her notes, no. The evidence shows the father...
Is the letter that you mentioned that was written initially, I believe you said, which told him how to intervene, is that in evidence?
I'm not sure if that is, but Ms. Ward testified that it was sent, that the father acknowledged receiving that letter and testified to the contents of that letter. And there was no objection to that. Throughout the case,
he acknowledged in his testimony that he got the letter?
Ms. Ward testified that during their first conversation, he acknowledged receiving that first letter. That was just a few weeks before their testimony. The letter was sent in November of 2009, and she had a conversation with him in November of 2009.
You started your remarks with that this was a case where the department had bent over backwards to try to help this man. Can you point us to documentation of those bending over backwards efforts? That's in the record?
To the testimonies of all the caseworkers, Melissa Podkovich, the CASAs as well. The court-appointed special advocate was on board on this case. The director had several conversations with the father describing how to intervene. Father never came to court. He was notified about court hearings, never came to court, never made his presence known until after the termination was filed. And I do agree that the best interest piece is the part that's relevant, since this child has been out of home for almost his entire life, well over 15 out of 22 months.
Doesn't his testimony, though, indicate that he did make attempts? I mean, didn't he call the juvenile court system? They said, go talk to legal aid, but he couldn't get assistance through legal aid.
But he never made those barriers, those concerns known to his case manager. He didn't really describe transportation problems to his case managers, especially in the beginning. He didn't describe those barriers to the case managers. The department is not psychic. They don't know of barriers unless the father lets them know. He told them, he adamantly denied that he was the father. So for a year, that time was lost when they could have tried to get him involved in the case. Then he told them that he already had an attorney, so again, they did not try to provide him with an attorney, provide him information about that. Again, more time lost. He did not always let them know about transportation problems, did not let them know the barriers he had. They're not psychic. They don't know unless a father starts telling them.
For purposes of determining abandonment or neglect, do we look at what the department knew, or do we look at what attempts the dad claims he made?
I think we look at both. Look at what a reasonable parent would do. And I think a reasonable parent would, first of all, attend court hearings, come to Omaha, try to see their child. And the evidence is that he did not do any of those. But I do think focusing on Jaden and his special needs is important. Jaden is not a normally functioning two-year-old. At the time of the termination hearing, he was about 2.5. He's a child who, at the tender age of 2, is diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder, which his symptoms included poor eye contact, total lack of play skills, indiscriminate affection to strangers, rages, and food issues. The therapist for Jane testified he has this diagnosis from early childhood neglect and multiple foster care placements. The father, instead of adamantly denying he was a father, had tried to become involved in the very beginning, maybe this child wouldn't have this syndrome. In 2009, the father was local. He was living in Nebraska. The father then, despite being notified that Jaden may be his child, took it upon himself to put geographical distance in between him and Jaden, which prevented him from coming to visit his child. The play therapy sessions that were set up by the department occurred once a month, couldn't occur more frequent due to the father's schedule, even despite the fact that the therapist testified that she would have wanted more sessions to facilitate that bonding between Jaden and his father. The testimony also showed that Jaden, in addition to having attachment issues, has also been diagnosed with a genetic disorder, receives medically based physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. This is a very high needs child, both medically and emotionally. The father has been unable to demonstrate the skills and understanding to meet his needs in therapy sessions. The therapist testified, his father's a nice guy, but he just doesn't get his child's needs. She had to, for each session, help redirect him, try to get him to interact with his son, try to get him to understand his son's special needs, but he just wasn't getting it. She testified the father lacks knowledge about his limitations and diagnosis despite her attempts to teach him and to redirect him during sessions. The evidence also shows that when the therapist and the foster parent who is present during sessions tried to increase the interactions between Jaden and his father in sessions, that Jaden responded with aggressive behavior. There was testimony about a March 6th therapeutic visitation where Jaden avoided his father when he was encouraged to have more interactions with him. And that evening, I believe the foster parent testified that she paid for trying to get the interactions due to Jaden's tantrums, rages, that took several days for Jaden to calm down.
Jaden, so are you going to the place with this that, given the child's issues and the dad's issues, that he is an unfit parent for this child?
Yes, I think a part to look at is the beneficial relationship between parent and child. I don't think there is one in this case. There is no bond, there is no attachment, and there's a lack of the father's ability to try to facilitate an attachment for a child of his needs, and Jane does not appear to want that attachment to him.
So looking to the future rather than the past, does the evidence show that it would not be feasible or possible that bond could be formed?
I don't think anyone has a crystal ball.
Well, I understand that, but
I don't know. All I know is that
we're sort of in the business of making predictions in these cases, aren't we?
I do know that the therapist testified that Jane is a child who needs permanency now, him more so than any other child based on his diagnosis, and that he can't wait for his father to catch up. We have all this time lost at the father's fault, the father denying that he was the father of Jane, the father not taking active steps to come to Omaha to have visitation. That's due to the father's fault. Jane, 2.5 years later, has these issues, and Jaden just can't wait for his father to try to facilitate that attachment with once-a-month therapeutic sessions. It may never happen. We had several people at the termination trial testify that it was in Jaden's best interest for parental rights to be terminated. Both CASAs, the director of the court-appointed special advocate program, the direct CASA working on the case, caseworkers, everyone, and the therapist, everyone was in agreement that he may be a nice guy, but he's just not an appropriate parent for Jane at this time. And Jane is a child who needs permanency, stability, and someone who is attuned to his needs, his very special needs, at the very present moment. Out of time, unless anyone has a question.
I think not. Thank you very much. Council has her rebuttal time, I believe. All right.
Thank you, Your Honors. Ms. Shuckman testified that the department bent over backwards to help this father. That's just not the case. It's also not the case that they did not know that he had barriers such as transportation. Page 169 in the Bill of Exceptions, Matt Oliver testified that he knew. And on page 251, Nancy Wilson testified that she knew. With regards to best interest, here, yes, we do have a child with special needs. However, parental rights cannot be terminated solely on that basis. There must be clear and convincing evidence as to what those needs are, which we do have, as well as clear and convincing evidence that the parent is either unwilling or unable to provide for those needs. We don't have the unwilling here.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Do I understand from the record that there was at least an occasion when the father was to be, I believe, in Omaha for either a visitation or for court, and he said that he couldn't come because he was taking care of his mother?
There were, after the filing of the termination proceedings, there were 10 total visits scheduled. 5 of them occurred, 3 were due to no fault of Mr. Wilson's, and 2, yes, he had an ill grandmother with pneumonia in Kansas, and I believe his testimony was he was at the hospital with her, and he tried to reschedule those visits, Your Honor. So he did miss two.
But his sister was a nurse that he lived with.
He lived with...
So could we gather from that that he chose to be with his grandmother as opposed to his son?
I think that would possibly be a reach, Your Honor. Oftentimes in these cases, visitations are scheduled and things occur even when parents are in town and things need to be rescheduled. So it's not rare that if there's an illness in the family that the parent says, hey, can we reschedule? The evidence shows that in this case, three of those visits that did not happen, two were due because of the therapist changed her schedule and said, I'm no longer available, and one was because the transportation failed to pick him up. So maybe one way to look at it is he was choosing his grandma, but I think an ill family member is a valid reason to attempt to reschedule a visit, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So for these reasons, we're respectfully requesting that this court issue an order reversing the decision of the juvenile court because it's not in the best interest of this child to not have a parental relationship with his father. It is a fundamental constitutional right, and the state has not proved that they do not have a beneficial relationship.
After we've gone through the argument now, it sounds to me like this is a lot of who did the judge believe, your guy or the people from the department? Is that an unfair characterization?
It's possible. I'm not sure if it's who he believed or...
Well, I mean,
obviously
the two of you have presented diametrically opposing views of what went on. And I assume that unless you're misrepresenting the record, which I don't think you are, that's what the record looks like. You've got this story and that story.
I think it's important to keep in mind, if we're evaluating the facts and who the judge believed, the bulk of the evidence cited in my brief did not come from Jonathan Wilson. It came from the records, from the reports from the caseworkers, the written reports from the CASA worker and her director, as well as the testimony of the state's witnesses.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both for coming. The case is submitted and you're excused. Thank you.